Tune it in, check it out, listen up, find out what it is all about.
Hello, this is Matthew Bronson, and this is another conversation with Matthew Bronson on KUPR Radio, FM 99.9 on the dial. And today our conversation is with Gary Brower. Amongst a very long list of credits, he is the publisher of Malpace Review and is very involved in the Duende Poetry Series. So welcome to Conversations with Matthew Bronson, Mr. Brower.
Thank you.
First of all, let's talk about how you ended up in Placidus.
Well, I used to teach at the University of New Mexico in the early 70s before I went to California, where I taught at USC and UCLA. And I lived in the Southeast Heights of Albuquerque. But when I decided to retire, I knew I was always going to retire back to New Mexico.
But your point of origin was Kansas, if I recall.
Kansas City, Missouri. That's okay. Where I was born. And I lived in various places in Missouri. Actually, I lived coast to coast. But what happened was, knowing the area here and wanting to retire here from my California jobs when it was time to retire, I knew Placidus, and I knew that that was one of the places I wanted to live. So when...
And what year was that?
The year that I moved back here was 2004. What I did was, I had a house I bought with no money down during the bubble. And so I knew that you could do this California switch, where you can sell your house for a lot in California and buy a pretty good house in New Mexico, because houses were cheaper in New Mexico.
Certainly.
So I came around and came out and looked and found a house I liked in Placidus, and which is the place that I had identified as probably where I would want to live in my return, my retirement, and found that house and called the realtor up after he'd shown me the house houses all day and said, I want that one. And I didn't know what I'd get for the house in California, but as I knew, it would be a lot more. So I was able to retire and come where I wanted to. My wife's ashes are scattered on La Bajada Hill, so I was always coming back to Mexico.
All right. Well, that's... Yeah, I'm always interested because it even people who grew up in Bernalillo may not have ever come over the hill to Placidus.
That's right.
So we are not native New Mexicans.
Mm-hmm.
We traveled back and forth. I worked in Albuquerque for a while. And when we were looking for a place to settle down, we had been to Albuquerque. I brought my wife out three times. It wasn't until the third trip that we even had heard about Placidus. So it's something I'm always curious about.
Well, the other thing about Placidus is it has a very large artistic community. And as I'm a writer, former professor, and I'm an editor and so on, I like the idea of being in an artistic area. And some say that approximately 20% of the inhabitants of Placidus are artists of one kind or another. Sculptors, writers, painters, whatever.
I would think it would be much higher.
It could even be higher. That's true.
Because I was wondering if they were going to prohibit me from moving here because of my lack of artistic ability. All right. Well, so you are the publisher of El Malpais Review.
The Malpais Review.
Malpais.
Yes. Mal means bad. Pais means land. So the bad it means badlands in Spanish. We have the Malpais National Monument out by Zuni in New Mexico.
So it's the badlands, as in the desert, as opposed to that land is bad.
Yes. The badlands, mainly in this area, it particularly means volcanic basaltic rock. It's not like the badlands in South Dakota.
And when did you start publishing the review?
So I started publishing, I've been publishing for 5 years, so about 2010, I think.
So, you've taught at a university level, you're multilingual, you read and write poetry in different languages. why 5 years ago? What happened? Was it something you were always thinking about and that was the right time?
There was no poetry journal or magazine of any kind in Albuquerque at that time. And so I said, well, somebody needs to do something about it. And I found out a way to do it that was not outrageously expensive. And so that was the key. And I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And I had a lot of other poets. The poetry scene in New Mexico is very big, particularly between Albuquerque and Santa Fe, and then there's some in Taos and Las Cruces. But just in between Albuquerque and Santa Fe in the month of September of this year, for example, there were 84 different poetry events. So, I mean...
That's considerable.
Yes, and it's grown over the years, too. After I founded Malpais Review, two other people got the idea, and shortly after that, we had Adobe Walls and the Mastaquila Review, although they only published twice a year. The Malpais Review is four times a year. People said, well, how are you ever going to do that four times a year? I said, well, I used to be the managing editor of a daily newspaper in Los Angeles, so it also had a weekly and a monthly, and I used to be the founder editor of a Spanish language weekly in Southern Oregon years ago, so if I can do those, I can do four times a year.
This is just in your spare time.
Exactly. Well, not quite.
No. As I understand it, you're working on the latest issue.
Yes.
And can you share who will be featured in that edition?
Well, every issue has a featured poet, and every issue has an anthology of some kind of poetry. And normally I have New Mexico poets, but I had the opportunity. And so George Calamaras, who's the Poet Laureate of Indiana, is the featured poet in this forthcoming issue of Malpais. And the anthology is actually an anthology of poems from a previous predecessor journal called Central Avenue that was published by Dale Harris prior to my arrival. Well, I arrived while I was still publishing. And I took her up. She's the associate editor of Malpais. And so, also, living in Placitas, you know, we have a poetic tradition here going back to the 60s. This is a big countercultural place. And the Thunderbird Bar, where people like Allen Ginsberg read and big-name rock bands. It burned down many years ago, unfortunately. But the very famous Robert Creeley, one of the Black Mountain poets, lived here in Placitas twice. And also Ed Dorn, another one of the Black Mountain poets, lived here for a short while. And these are major poets. And they lived here, and there was a lot of poetry going on here. So there's kind of a poetry tradition in this area, a creative tradition.
Right.
And that also is why we established in 2004 the Duende Poetry Series of Placitas, which has readings four times a year at the winery here. We had a reading on October 11th with one of the top poets in the United States, Tony Hoagland, who recently won the $50,000 Jackson Poetry Prize. And he was read in tandem with Levi Romero, the top, the centennial poet of New Mexico. And if we had a poet laureate of New Mexico, he would probably be it. It was an incredible reading, and it was packed.
Well, not to jump around too much, but you did mention the Duente poetry. Is that always at the Anastasi Library?
Always.
Because that's a beautiful facility.
It is. It's our home because the guy who's one of the owners and runs it, Jim Fish, is one of the directors of the series, of the Duende Poetry Series, because he provides the free space for us. And I'm the other director, and Larry Goodell, a longtime poet who's lived about 60 years in Placitas, well-known poet nationally. We're the three directors of the Duende Poetry Series.
Now, the Duende Poetry Series, did that start around 2010 when you started doing the review?
No, it started in 2004.
Oh, so even before started?
Yes, even before. I just moved back here from California, and immediately I found out about it. They said, oh, become one of the directors, and so I did.
No, I'm looking at the Spring 25 edition of the, help me again, the Malpais?
Malpais.
Malpais.
Spring 2015, yeah.
It's over 200 pages.
Yes, they generally run 250 to 270 pages.
And on each of your editions, you have very interesting artwork. How is that? Is it the same artist, or how do you get your cover art?
Well, when I decided to do this, I said, I want to have really good covers. And I'm going to have almost exclusively New Mexico artists on the cover. They may be photographers, because sometimes I have photography, and other times I have painters or sculptors or whatever. They're all New Mexico artists. And I've had a lot of very well-known ones, like Jade Leyva here in Positas. She's a very good and well-known local artist. She's had two covers of the magazine. She's the only one who's had two covers, actually. And I've had some very famous artists on the cover.
Well, Mr. Broward, tell me about the selection process. How do you go about finding which piece of art you want? And then, as you said, and as we all know, there is no shortage of fantastic art in Placitas, much less the Albuquerque area. It must be very difficult to say, this is the one.
No, it's easy. I have an aesthetic dartboard.
Okay.
No, actually not. But I have
it's made by Milton Bradley, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And I knew him personally. But
Milton or Bradley?
Milton, both. Okay. Actually not. But, what happens is, because I am out there, not only at poetry readings, but I go to a lot of art openings and go to galleries and I go to museums and so on. I meet a lot of artists and a lot of other creative people. And I cannot afford, I'm putting this out on a shoestring and still is expensive. I mean, I have really good prices for creating it, but I don't have tons of money. So I can't, the contributors don't get paid.
Right.
But, and neither do the artists of the cover, but they get a lot of publicity. Malpais Review goes across the country. It goes to Europe. It has many university libraries carry it. And so I have to find artists who are also willing not to be paid other than in publicity to get their artwork. And then I just go through their website and I talk it out with them. And I have a very good graphic designer. She has an MFA in graphic design from the University of Iowa, worked for 20 years for Penfield Press, and so on, and is an artist herself.
Would you like to give her a plug?
Her name is Esther Feske. She's on the third page. We have all the staff listed. And on the board, I have very famous poets on the board, like Margaret Randall, Rennie Golden, Charles Potts.
Now, if someone wanted to be considered for a cover,
mm-hmm.
could they submit it to you?
Of course. We have a website, and the website has, on the one hand, you could submit poetry to the one part of the website, and you could submit artworks to the other.
Well, let's give that website.
Yeah, it's malpaisreview.com, all lowercase. MalpaisReview.com.
Okay, malpaisreview.com.
Yes.
And people know how to spell com.
Yes.
And dot.
Yes.
All right, so people can submit art, whether it's regardless of the medium or photography or whatever.
Well, it has to,
not sculpture. But.
No sculpture. If I've done sculpture too, but it has to be really outstanding sculpture, and of course you have to have good photos of it.
Certainly.
That could reproduce, And I upload the whole thing myself to the publisher, and they get back to me as to how the quality of the pictures, and whether they're photos or paintings, how they came out, and if necessary, my graphic designer adjusts things or whatever.
Right. Now, each of the quarterly reviews,
yes,
are obviously they're done seasonally, but is there a theme for each edition?
No.
No.
The only theme edition I had was in 2012, because it was the statehood centennial of New Mexico. I had a centennial edition. And that centennial edition had featured the centennial poet, Levi Romero. It had essays with poetry on the Civil War period of New Mexico, an essay on the epic poem in Spanish, called Historia de la Nueva México by Gaspar Pérez de Villagra.
And, know him well.
Yes, right. Well, you're older than I thought then, because he died in many centuries ago. But he was a person who was with the Juan de Oñate expedition. And that epic poem in Spanish, which has been translated into English, and the University of New Mexico Press published it. But it, of course, predates what most people on the East Coast don't understand, is that they think, oh, well, everything started on the East Coast. No, 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 no. American history, if you get beyond the Native Americans and Europeans arriving, started with the Spaniards coming here north from Mexico across the Sonora Desert. Once they arrived in Mexico City, it took about 20 years to figure out how to get up here. But the first expedition was in 1536. That came out, it went to Zacatecas and went up the inside rather than along the coast to New Mexico. And it was run by a priest, Fray Marcos de Niza, but he didn't ask permission of the local viceregal government in Mexico City, and so they brought him back and punished him because you had to ask to go up there.
Oh, yes.
And after that, there were many other expeditions, and finally the colonization. So the Spanish were here much earlier than, you know, the Anglos or the Swedes or the French or the Dutch or whoever on the East Coast. And that's unfortunately never told in American history books usually, because it's written by Anglos, apparently for Anglos, because they totally ignore the Hispanic populace of this area and of other areas.
Right.
So that was the only thematic issue I had. Generally, I like to have a variety in every issue. I have a featured poet. I have an anthology of some kind of poetry, sometimes in translation. For example, I've had anthologies of Iraqi poetry in translation, Spanish poetry, Brazilian poetry, Iraqi poetry, Latvian poetry, and so on. And sometimes they're in English. I mean, they don't have to be translated. It's like I had two volumes of a feminist anthology, and then I had one LGBTQ anthology, gay and lesbian anthology. I had L.A. poets. I had Washington State poets. So, but there's some kind of anthology as well as some featured poet. Most of the featured poets, not all, but most of them are New Mexico poets. And then aside from that, there are features. We've had three or four essays on Tom McGrath, the famous American poet who wrote one of the great poems of contemporary American poetry, Letter to an Imaginary Friend, and also on Ed Dorn, on Creeley, Robert Creeley, and on many others.
Right.
So we have essays, we have poetry, we have poetry in translation, we have interviews, the poet who's featured in an issue always has an interview, and then there's that 20 pages of his or her poetry.
Right. Now, if I'm thumbing through, you know, the spring edition here,
yes,
and it looks like this is similar to most of them,
yes,
around 200 poems per edition.
At least, yeah. Right. And they're in different contexts, of course.
Right.
The thing that's different about Malpais Review is I give the historical and other contexts for the background of the poems, particularly if they're poems in translation, in order that people understand what this poem is about. Too often you see poetry magazines where they just throw translated poems from other literatures in there and they don't do anything else. So
you're providing the analysis because of your educational background and
yes,
knowledge of
poetry. Yeah, if it's not analysis, it's the background, the historical background, whatever.
But you're setting the stage.
I'm setting the stage. So that, and what I found is this works very well. People love these essays behind the poems, and they read them all. And I've seen people go through anthologies and translations of other literatures, poetry from other literatures, and they just thumb right on by the translations because they don't understand. And the translations may or may not be good. So that makes it even worse. But it works very well. The other thing I try to do is I mix prose and poetry. Now, I only publish poetry or essays on poetry or interviews in poetry. I don't publish short stories. It's not a literary magazine. It's a poetry magazine only. But all the essays in there are on poetry, and all the interviews are with poets and so on. But you have to read poetry a different way than you read prose. It's totally different.
And can you explain how to do that? Or?
Well, I don't know if I can explain how to do it, but what I can tell you is this. Poetry, first of all, has a psychic structure beneath the surface reality of the words. So the words create one reality. Beneath that, there is another psychic structure that goes deeper than the words. I mean, if they were just as, if poetry were just as simple as reading a newspaper, you wouldn't need it, you know. But poetry is the most difficult of literary genres. That's why there are people who can understand every literary genre and they can't understand poetry. But if you understand poetry, you can understand all the other literary genres. The thing about poetry is it has layers of meaning. And so the structuralists call this the deep structure of poetry. So to really get to a poem, you have to give your consciousness to and totally concentrate on and focus on that poem. Now, sometimes you find the poem's not worthy or you can't get into it, but prose is another story. Prose doesn't demand all that. Prose, unless it's poetic prose, generally prose demands that you just read it and you accept the surface reality.
It's like speaking, but putting it down on paper.
Right. And so, except if it's literary prose, you have to couch it in literary language, which may include metaphors and whatever. So the thing is, with Malpais Review, one of the things I wanted to do was, you know, I've seen these anthologies where they have 300 pages of poetry. Now, there's no way you can sit down and read 300 pages of poetry because of the way you have to read it, which demands much more psychic involvement and into the text. And you can't read three, sit in one sitting, you can't read 300 poems. I mean, you just can't do it unless you're sitting there for 2 days.
And it probably you wouldn't.
You wouldn't want to. No, right. Of course not. But what I've had people tell me this. See, I have the prose and the poetry. Prose, poetry. So I mix it up. Plus, I have black and white artworks like good photography in the inside, as well as the four color covers on the outside. And this is all to break up the poetry and the prose, break up the conscious. So in other words, it's kind of like cleaning your palate a little bit. So what happens is, I've had very well-known poets tell me, I had one very famous, she used to be the poet laureate of Santa Fe, she said, you know, Gary, she said, I got the latest Malpais Review in the mail and I sat down and I started reading and I couldn't stop. I sat there and I read all the way through it and then I turned around and read through it a second time. If you had 300 pages of poetry, you couldn't do that. But you can with this, because it gives your mind a rest from the very demanding type of reading of poetry to the less demanding type of prose.
Well, Gary, let's talk a minute about the creation of poetry. Mm-hmm. Is that just a God-given talent? Or if someone who's listening to this say, I used to try a little poetry, and I want to get better at it. Do they just have to have that in them, or can they learn how to be a good poet?
Well, I don't think it's God-given, because there's too many bad poets around. but yes, you can learn. You can learn poetry if you have a good teacher. Just taking classes doesn't mean anything. Basically, you have to... I mean, you can do a lot of reading on your own. You can go to a lot of poetry readings and listen to poets read, really good poets. You can also read about poetry, and you can sort of practice it yourself. You know, I started teaching poetry in Spanish because I was a Spanish professor. And then later I sort of got the idea, well, you know, after you do something for a while, you know, then you get the idea, well, let me try this. And so I wrote my poetry, of course, in English. And and then I just developed from there. And I went to lots of poetry readings. I met a lot of famous poets. And it developed. But, of course, I was doing poetry every day.
Right.
And, I mean, I was teaching, you know, poetry.
But there are some people who, probably a lot of people in a different art form, say, music, they take music lessons, they take guitar lessons, mm-hmm. or piano lessons, and they practice every day, mm-hmm. and they're okay. They never become really stellar. Poetry is the same way.
Yes, it's exactly the same.
I mean, you probably wouldn't read poetry at the Christmas party, but you could play some Christmas jingles on the piano if there were one around.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But, well, I as a poet, I also am not only just a poet who writes and publishes, I've also been a performance poet. I performed with, I have a CD, four CDs out. And one of them is about the Spanish Civil War and Spanish poets. And I have flamenco guitarists backing me up on that one. I have another CD, and I've done this live, too, in many venues in New Mexico and other places. I also have one out on Native American themes, which I have a Native American flautist who plays background for me as I read this poem. And because I like the idea of bringing the arts together, so putting music together with poetry to me is a very good thing. I don't know if you know this, but in downtown Albuquerque now for several years, there's been a very unique program. It's every Sunday morning. Down on 6th Street, or 7th, I think it is now, it was on 5th, and it's called Sunday Chatter. Originally it was called the Church of Beethoven. They have a program of classical music with musicians from the Albuquerque Philharmonic. They are very, very good.
I would hope so.
Yes, they are. They're very good. And they have usually about 10 minutes of poetry. And so they'll have a poet. It's poetry and classical music, which is a very unusual thing. National Public Radio did two programs, features, that is, on Sunday Chatter. It used to be called Church of Beethoven. That was the best title, but they had to give it up because of that lawsuit.
Now that you, as you said, and this is Conversations with Matthew Bronson on KUPR 99.9 on the FM dial here in Placidas, New Mexico, and we're having a conversation with Gary Brower, amongst other credits. He is the publisher of Malpais Review.
Malpais.
But before the end of this interview, Gary, I will get this
correctly.
Yes,
Malpais. Well, you know what a lot of people do. A lot of Anglos call it the Malpai Review. And I say, no. It's got an S on it, Malpais. I always correct them. You know, the accent is on the I, Malpais.
The CDs. Mm-hmm. Are they available for purchase?
They're available on the website.
Okay.
And all of the issues of Malpais for the last 5 years are available on Amazon.
Okay, so either on Amazon, and they would look up Gary Brower?
No, they just look up Malpais Review.
Okay, MalpaisReview.com.
Right, and also a lot of bookstores carry them. Opposite Bookstore in Santa Fe, Treasure House Books in Old Town in Albuquerque, Arte de Placitas Gallery in Placitas, the Moby Dickens Bookstore in Taos, the Beyond Baroque Poetry Center Bookstore in Los Angeles, the Anthology Books in Portland, Oregon, and so on.
And the complete set is available at the Placitas Community Library.
Yes.
Here in beautiful Placitas, New Mexico.
Yes, it is.
Also,
I should say, at the University of New Mexico, Zimmerman Library has two subscriptions.
Excellent. Is there perhaps a poem from your upcoming edition or one that you just happen to like that you would like to share with us now?
Well, I don't know how much time I would have to do that, but I might be able to find something short.
Doesn't start off with there was an old lady from...
No.
No, okay.
No. This is a poem. From one of my books, which is called The Book of Knots, and the poem is called Trail, dedicated to my grandparents and to their house. 1. How much house the memory of my childhood, the abandoned Victorian my grandfather rebuilt, ornate gables and banisters, porches and pantries, tree swing and outhouse, storm cellar and well pump, black iron stove and old radio, the backyard garden of tuber and legume discoveries. How much more home that house of my grandparents, she clerking the farmer's store, he rural judge, church janitor. How much place that time ago, the village in fading reverie, like the old river bridge linking little towns on two sides of nowhere. Walking broken sidewalks to the red brick schoolhouse where I hear childhood voices, then to the heart of the town for 10-cent cherry phosphates at the drugstore soda fountain, eggs held up to the tester, large metal milk containers in the creamery of the tin-ceiling grocery store, walking round the town square on Saturday nights, only then filled with old cars, buckboards, when the countryside came to trade. When the town's railroad died at the end of anthracite, many miners with death dust in their lungs in a slow fade, like the village band playing from the ghost of the gazebo in the square. How much more the less of it seems, how time the walls of that house, carrying water from pump to kitchen where useless faucets hung above the sink or to metal tubs in the washhouse with scrubboard and hand-crank clothes wringer. How much house then to stand so vacant now? One day filled for a trial, my grandfather presiding, justice of the peace. From the kitchen I hear my grandmother say, "Those who don't listen have to feel," as she turns on the light, sweet legacy of Roosevelt's REA. I want to call to the past, ring the phone we never had, talk to people who now exist only in my mind, in a place that loses count with each new census. 2. A trip with my grandfather to cut a Christmas tree, pulling it on a sled among crouching snowdrifts, leaving a trail into the history of conifers, fitting the tree with its evergreen heart into the old Pontiac's trunk. Then home, the car stopping on the uphill shoulder of an isolated two-lane blacktop, the emergency brakes metal scrape, my grandfather slumping over the steering wheel, clutching his heart. My 7 years unraveled, holding the brake with all my childhood as if it could stop death. How suddenly gone, the little boy, backtracking the trail of a Christmas tree. How lost, the more lost, nightmare trees, the stranger on the white horse riding to the car across winter fields. How much more sad to lose this sadness, this blizzard in the heart, evergreen withering in the car trunk, the blank holiday on my calendar, distant fears of metal on metal, the winter forest stillness in the open casket where I lay invisible beside my grandfather, mourning a little funeral for my childhood.
Bravo.
Thank you. That's a true story, of course.
This was about your grandparents?
Yes, it was. My grandfather.
Did he have the opportunity to read it before he passed?
Oh, no. It took me 35 years to write that poem. No, he died instantly. And I was in the back seat, alone in the car with him, on a country road. And it was how I found out about death. And that incident taught me one thing that I have kept to all my life. Make every day count.
I think with that, Gary Brower of Malpais.
Malpais.
Get the A out of there. Malpais Review, MalpaisReview.com, as well as the Duende Poetry Series that happens at the Anastasi Winery throughout the season. I think that's where we're going to bring it to a close for today. We, of course, could go on for hours and hours and hours, but I don't believe that the station would let us air that. So, again, Conversations with Matthew Bronson today was with Gary Brower. And until next time, have a great day.
Thank you, Matthew.